is collective bargaining between the United Faculty of Florida UCF chapter and the Board of Trustees bargaining team for UCF. It is August 6th. Man, time is getting away from us at 1:04 p.m. And we are ready.
Thank you. Thank you, Sherry. So earlier this morning, I sent the sent a counterproposal to your proposal for salaries, Article 23.
Yes.
So I have some talking points regarding, I guess, making some arguments regarding why, some of the background on our proposal. But I'll start a little bit with the proposal, and then I'll go into our talking points, if that's all right with you.
That's fine with me.
Okay. Okay, so I think you can all see this now. So our counterproposal has several things. So some stuff that is new, but I've seen it in a lot of other contracts, which is, I guess some people call it equal pay for equal work, but it's just a recognition of the Federal Equal Pay Act and compensation discrimination that men and women employees in the workplace. I've also looked at it most recently. It also includes transgender, gender identity. So it's a lot more broader than just male, female. But I did want to include that in this contract, and a lot of our other SUS and colleges have this language there. And I will say that one of the main complaints that I've received over the last 4 years is a lot of women perceiving, or sometimes in reality, getting paid less than other males hired at the same time doing similar work, let's say at the assistant professor level. And so it's recognizing that we also recognize the law. So I would like to have that in there. And you know, it is the federal law. I know we don't always put that language in there, but I think it's particularly important now, especially that there have been some changes to both Title VII, Title IX, and in some cases beneficial to our BU, in some cases perhaps not. But that one I'd like to keep there. 23.2. So if we add that, then the next one is promotion increases. So one of the things is having like a statement, and I know some of my predecessors did not, you know, chief negotiator did not like statements because they thought they were empty. But the reality is that this type of statement language helps us remember why we have promotions, why we do the things that we do. And so this short statement, which I'd also like it to remain, is the purpose to ensure that the University of Central Florida attracts and retains diversity in the most highly qualified workforce available to effectuate its academic research, teaching, and service mission. And to do so, it is essential to conduct effective support of current employees and their career goals by providing fair and equitable internal transfer and promotional processes. And even though it might state the obvious, it is important to remember, I think, that because I think just going from promotion increases, and in particular to outsiders who may not always be familiar with this language, to go from a promotion increases and immediately into the language is sometimes, you know, they need this kind of like prep, you know, like, well, an introduction as to why we have promotion raises in the first place, to basically recognize the good work of faculty. So I wanted to bring, so before I get into like the request for pay salary increase and promotion increases, I wanted to just point out those two things. I think there was something else in here. Oh, here we go. Let me go down a little bit. Okay. And that is for equivalent allocation to other units. Okay, so I went and I did a little bit more research on this topic in general. So, and I think Sherry, you might be familiar with this background, but when TIPS, RIA, SOTLs, when they all came into existence, I guess the librarians had realized right away. And at that time, I think whatever represented sent CDL, I think it had a different name at that time in 2003, 2004. So these different groups were kind of left out of the TIPS, RIAs, and SOTLs. And at one point, the libraries almost, you know, basically wanted to have a duty of fair representation suit against the union for not having this kind of language. So we want to make sure we represent all our bargaining units, including the ones that might not necessarily qualify for TIPS and RIAs. And I also did a little bit of cleaning up of the language a bit. Because, you know, the main thing, again, the statement is we want to offer equitable opportunity for recognition of outstanding evaluations and productivity of these employees. And I think most of you will agree on this call that all of us work a lot more than at other universities, just because we're very big and we have a small amount of faculty and staff relative to the large amount of students and other needs at our campus. A little finagling that I did over here is that, which I'm hoping will be more amenable to the administration, is that this would happen at least, you know, similar language to how the RIAs, TIPS, and SOTLs are, that you would qualify every 4 years after continuous with, here, this is the new line here. All full-time employees in this category who do not qualify for the other three will be able, with at least 4 years of continuous non-OPS service at UCF immediately prior to the current year. So making it something where, similar to how RIAs, SOTLs, and TIPS are organized, so bringing in similar language for this type of raise as well. And over here, eligibility and employee in one of the designated units, when they receive an outstanding annual evaluation for at least 4 years of continuous non-OPS service at UCF. The other thing too, it seemed in the presentation that we saw a few months ago, maybe perhaps like 6 weeks or 2 months ago nearly now, it seemed that the library or those who do not qualify for the other were okay with having a possible range between like 1% and 1.7% of their salary. And again, so if you read it carefully, you'll see that the language makes it more in line with what the practices we have already at UCF. Do you have any questions?
No, not right now.
Okay. Aside from that, let me see. So I'm hopping ahead a little bit because a lot of it, some of it just remains status quo as Chuck, and I worked off of Chuck's proposal as well. So another thing here that's new, lines 213 through 220. We're still requesting the 4 Distinguished Creative Scholarship and Research Awards for excellence in one of the following categories. And I remember last time, I think, Sherry, you mentioned about getting wires crossed, because it is Marie and I had spoken with Jana Jensinski. Nina on the call was also met with, I think, with the Faculty Senate. And it was actually people from the Faculty Senate who had worked on this language for increasing our number of research excellence awards. And it was actually Elizabeth Klopnoff, if I get correct.
Klopnoff.
Yeah, who suggested doing this. And I don't remember if you remember Nina also saying that she also suggested increasing the number from 2,000 to, I think, 3,000, if I recall correctly. Nina mm-hmm. can verify the number. So, but anyway, we didn't ask for more money. We just asked for more awards in this one. In the negotiation process. The reason why there's 4 categories, when Marie and I met with Jenna, she had actually suggested that instead of having 2 or 3 categories, we should perhaps have 4 to be as inclusive as possible in recognizing excellent work at UCF. And lastly, we discussed this here regarding honorable mentions. So I left that language there. So someone will, from each category, will receive an honorable mention at the Founders Day ceremony. So they'll also be recognized, perhaps they weren't the primary winner at the university level, but they were still recognized for their work. Okay. All right, so let me get down. What else do we have here? Okay. And this one we can discuss further today, but it's regarding ADIs.
Mm-hmm.
But we can discuss this later after I go through sure. Some of the other issues. Did you have a question?
No. I just said sure.
Mm-hmm. So ADIs here, this is, of course, assuming, you know, that there are going to be no raises, well then, you know, that also means that perhaps the school doesn't have enough money. Some of the language here is that ADIs for verified written offers of outside shall be subject to the same calculation of 1.5% at the salary rate limitation to recognize that, you know, if we can't get raises, perhaps nobody should be able to get enormous raises. And also we'll bring it also into perspective of some people who in recent past have received raises and perhaps did not, you know, and now it's become like a scandal because of what had happened, you know, what this professor had done.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm, if you don't mind, I'm going to go back up to our request for salary raises.
Okay.
And then I have some written material, like an argument as to why we need our salary raises.
Before you do, Yovana, the minutes, we didn't go over those.
I was just going to say, I forgot the minutes.
Okay, I forgot minutes too. Okay, yes. All right, you want to go minutes right now? This is a good pause.
They're extremely brief because that's just how they roll, you know. That way we don't argue over them for sure. And I just wanted to make sure that that was on the record, that the minutes were okay, because Brandis needs to take care of that. So I just wanted to thank you. Thank you for reminding me.
All right. Did you want to share the screen to show the minutes?
You have them in your email, I think, because Brianna sent them to you, but just before the meeting started. Mm-hmm. Let me just check and see what email she sent it to. She may not know. Are you transitioning to the Gmail account that's just your name?
Yes, my name, yeah, because it's free.
Oh, the other one's not free?
It's not free. And so anytime like there's a glip or Google suspects something's going off, it just turns the whole thing off. So that's why I don't always get, I mean, I eventually do get the emails, but it's, this is a much safer, much more secure.
I really liked being able to send it to the UFF president, UFF treasurer. It was very convenient for me, but okay.
I'll try to fix it and see if I can like talk to Google. We've had a few conversations with them. So, so share screen. So I'll share the screen just so my whole team can see the minutes and see if they approve. Okay. So the minutes.
Those are the people that are just on your official bargaining team. Not, you have a lot of people coming, which is great. I just wanted to, you know, this is your team that we write down, just so everyone understands why isn't my name there. That's why.
Okay, yeah. Because I think in the past we used to have a guest list, but that's your list, right, that you keep for your
record? In the past we have a guest list. I think Brandis is keeping track of the names that she sees on the screen just because we have a guest list that way. But it's not. That has always been just sort of like for the record, and it went in my meeting book, and you know, it was just a physical representation of what we're doing.
Okay. All right. Does everyone on my team, do you approve of the minutes?
Yes.
I think it would be hard to have a disagreement. Yeah, I know. All right. Thank you very much for taking that time out, Yovana, and you can switch back. Thank you so much.
Sure, of course. Okay. So. I'm going to go here. Okay, so getting back over here. So, all right, so the salary increases that we're requesting. So the promotion increases, we're requesting 2% in each category, so from 9 to 11% from assistant to the associate, and then in B, line 21, requesting an increase from 10 to 12%. And some of the reasons for that are to be more in line with our aspiring and other SUS schools, which have higher promotion rates, and also to encourage and also retain our best faculty by having these higher salary promotions, or promotion increases, excuse me. The other increases here, we are asking for an across-the-board salary increase of 3%, and with the minimum base increase of 1,500, because some of the people in our BU actually get extraordinarily low salary, so a 3% does not mean very much for them. So we wanted to at least have a base of 1,500. And down here, we do have a one-time payment. I know this has come up before in our COVID agreements, but in addition to the across-the-board increases, all employees eligible for that increase shall receive a one-time payment of $3,000 to offset the costs incurred from remote work location during the global pandemic.
So, Yovana, can I just ask a question here?
Mm-hmm.
So, you're asking for 3% here.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still asking for the 1%, I mean, the $1,000? Asking for 3,000 here and 1,000 in the MOU, so you're asking for a total of 4,000?
We're actually like asking for a COVID stipend. So the COVID stipend, yeah, and we're just putting it in different places. Like, where's the best place to put it? Is it best to put it in the MOU or is it best to put it in the salary article?
Okay.
So I have some talking points, so I'll bring those up. And Charlie and Brianna, I'll email it to you after this session. I'll email you this so you can post it. So our team met, our bargaining team, each one did like a different section in order to have all the data that we needed to understand where we stand, you know, because we were trying to think in terms of salary, in terms of, you know, what we all deserve. How do we also fit with the other state universities? What kind of efforts that some of our BU members have been doing in order to continue functioning during COVID? So the opening statement here is basically we recognize, you know, that UCF team, that COVID pandemic has had, you know, an incredible hardship for UCF students, faculty, staff, and administrators. We realize all of that. Recent events, I mean, it's not just COVID. Most of us know it's the economic crisis. If you're keeping up with stats, you know, the GDP has, you know, depending on the quarter, decreased last quarter for 32%. If the New York Times, UCF, is apparently a, you know, in the news very often, it was again the Orlando community, UCF community, were again in the New York Times, this time because of the unemployment rate in the region is also about 30%. How accurate these stats are, I'm not, you know, these are New York Times and other professional organizations. I didn't collect the stats myself, but they're pretty, I think, what we're seeing around us with all the businesses going out, more homelessness, and just seeing general human suffering all around us. I think it's pretty obvious that things are not well. So that's what this recent events have placed UCF front and center in the national international news. And our humble state, Florida, is one of the most important states in the United States and will most likely determine national outcomes in the November elections. We are the second largest university nation. I know we all know that, but we have a very good opportunity this time to be leaders and not followers during this pandemic and economic recession. I think it's imperative, and we tell our administrators that our faculty and professional employees, you know, basically thank them, not just with words, but also with, you know, these one-time bonus or COVID stipend that could come out of the CARES Act, potentially out of the HEROES Act if passed very soon, and also with a raise. So I know, you know, I follow the UCF news. I know Dr. Seymour, Dr. Johnson, Dr. Cartwright have graciously thanked our faculty and staff. And I think I just saw one again this morning. And we appreciate and wholeheartedly agree with these sentiments. And we do plan to charge on. But we want to also protect our UCF family during this global pandemic. And that's one of the reasons why we are, and we did our research here with the CARES Act. The UCF team believes that a one-time payment of $3,000 for each unit faculty would be suitable partial compensation for their additional work and hardship during this time period. The requested amount is less than 10% of the funds of $51 million received under the CARES Act and would constitute an appropriate and equitable use of these funds. The intent of the CARES Act and the second stimulus package, if passed, is precisely to boost the economy. It's a stimuli, so we have to spend it through spending. So our local, state, and national economies expect us to spend the stimulus package funds. So that was where we believe the one-time bonus could come from, is from this CARE Act and the potential HEROES Act as well. Regarding the across-the-board salary request, some of our team members looked at enrollments for the fall. So in a much earlier, I think it was in April or May, if I recall correctly, much earlier at the beginning of our salary negotiations, we had the people come from budget committee or the budget office and tell us that we are tuition dependent. So if we are tuition dependent, and given that we're doing our research and seeing that enrollments are actually at the same level as before or even higher across some departments, we believe that we should be able to receive at least an inflation rate or a rate that will keep with inflation. So that's why we came up with the number for 3% across the board. For all in-unit faculty as an initial effort by this administration also to show their support of all the work that we're doing. We also did a comparison with other universities. We chose our aspiring schools, FSU, UF, and USF. And so we did a couple little things, little adjustments to correct for inflation, parity, and also cost of living in these, you know, to compare with like Tallahassee, Gainesville, and Tampa. So, questions? Okay, so UCF funding for in-unit faculty is historically low compared to aspirational and peer institutions. And, you know, we just put, we're not sure why there's an imbalance exists. It could be in part of use of ENG funds for capital construction projects by prior administrations, of course, not the current one. So the most recent available data, this is all public data, as most of you probably know, we could find it was from 2018. And what we have here is the number of in-unit faculty across the four schools. We are the highest because we just always are. So we can also do productivity output ratios out of this, and we're also the most productive of all the four schools, if you guys are interested in that. So salaries, so this is the total ENG fund spent on in-unit salaries. So it does not include auxiliary. We only did ENG because that's where most of our in-unit faculty is. And as you can see, yes, we do spend more. And then over here, you have the mean salary or the average salary per school. And so UCF is, again, at the bottom of this. But more interestingly than that is when we adjust for inflation for each region. Let me see, it's down here. Here we go. So in comparison, if you can see these two, and I'll try to make it so you can see both. Okay. So here, so after the cost of living adjustment, using 3.8, using the zip code of 32816, so adjusted, living in Tallahassee, so this 111 average salary actually goes a lot farther in Tallahassee to 137. If this school, I think this was UF with the 106, you know, it goes a lot farther in Gainesville. The 97 that is in Tampa apparently goes a lot farther also in Tampa. And then, of course, us at 96, lower in the four, we still stay the same. So if, you know, I wasn't going to add the productivity ratios, but if we're the most productive, if we're the lowest paid among the group, and, you know, and constantly also in the New York Times, I mean, we are an important university, and therefore, you know, we should really, the administration should consider compensating us for all of this, for all of our hard work and innovation and all the things that we do. So a couple things here, just the percentage of UCF. So yes, it, you know, if you needed to see percentages, how much more they're making than us here at UCF. All right, so I'll stop the share unless you guys want to see this. And do you have any questions? Oh, Sherry?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was muted. No, I don't have any questions at the moment.
Okay, all right. Chuck or anyone else, do you have any questions?
I don't have any questions at this time.
Okay. And my team, do you guys want to add anything else?
Thank you, Nina.
Yes, I would like to add.
Okay, Nina.
Can I hear?
Nina, I can hear you.
Yes. So we had at Faculty Senate, I am a member of the faculty Senate budget committee, and we had 1 week ago presentation of Mr. Trubac about he updated us about state of the budget. So in the summer enrollment of students increased by 11.5%. And enrollment of students in the fall increased by last week by 5.6%.
I
we also pointed out that it was a freeze for hiring, but those money are available to hire faculty. We just cannot hire them because of the faculty freeze. But those money also can be used for the salary increase. And so we have much better enrollment with numbers confirmed by Mr. Trubach. That's my addition.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, so I guess what Nina said, if I understood her correctly, because of the freeze for the hiring freeze, we can still use some of that salary that we're saving from the hiring freeze in order to institute a salary increase. Right, Nina? Okay. All right. Sherry, what would you like to do? Would you like to go into caucus, or would you like us to do?
No, I think when we looked, we've had a chance to look at it before you sent it. I did send it off to the provost, and I know that he is trying to set up a meeting with the president so that they can discuss it. So until I really hear something from them, I can't respond too much. I will say, on terms of the comparators that you used, FSU, UF, and USF, FSU and UF are preeminent universities, and they get a ton of extra money as a result of being that. USF was a preeminent, so they got extra money. I think they have now fallen off that list, but they are still in that emerging category, so they're still getting money that we are not getting. So I think a more relevant comparators for us would probably be FAU, FIU, universities that are more in our, I don't know how to say this, income category in a sense from the state, that we're in that sort of second tier of what they're calling now universities of distinction or something. They change these titles every year. But I do think there's a little bit of a mismatch there in our comparators. But I appreciate the effort on your part anyway. To do that.
We did FIU and FAU, and I actually talked to their president of the union, and the thing is, like, FIU is more teaching college, and the same with FAU. They're both more teaching oriented than we are. So we wanted to, at least my assumption since for the last 10 years and I've been at UCF, is that we are a research school. We are an R1. So I wanted to do a comparison with R1. I mean, FIU, FAU maybe, but at least the information that I received was that it's mostly teaching based, not research based. And given your comment, I think I've always had this question: what can help us be preeminent? And we do quite a bit at UCF, but what takes us to the next stage?
Having legislators that are willing to vote for us, I think.
Well, no, there are set criteria that we have to reach, and we've reached a lot of them, but I think the best estimates are that we're probably at least 5 years away from getting to that level.
But I think also, we did reach it one time and then they just rejiggered
we've never reached preeminent.
Oh, preeminent.
What they keep changing are the performance metrics, because we were like first and second for like 3 years on the performance metrics, and we were knocking out Florida, and that was just not acceptable. So they changed the performance metrics, and they changed those around every year. And frequently, from UCS perspective, and maybe it's just sour grapes on our part, I don't think so, but they change them in ways that definitely disadvantage us. We really have no, because they change them sometimes after we've already submitted our metrics based on what we thought were the metrics, the categories. It's hard. Well, you have to game that system, and it's a very hard thing to do. Preeminent metrics have not changed, but they're very high, and we've made a lot of progress, but we're still a ways away from them.
I can add something, Giovanna.
Yeah, please,
Marie. If I can add, okay, despite the fact that we may not be ranked the way we want, I believe that the facts are still valid, that we are faced with a situation that is really hard for everybody. Yet, as faculty, we manage to do the work, and the circumstances are not the best. We have more students in our classroom. We work more. The teaching environment is not the same at home or wherever other people are teaching, but yet we deliver as faculty. We do the job. We love our students. We respect our students. We love UCF. I do want UCF to take that into consideration, even if we're not preeminent the way we would want to be, but we give preeminent outcome in terms of what we do as faculty, and I believe and I think that we deserve what we're asking. So we want you to maybe put aside the fact that we're not a preeminent faculty and really look at our number, look at our efforts, look at what we're doing for our students, and to maintain, a good effort, better than good effort, to deliver our job and to be there for our students. We do all of that as faculty. So I believe that we really deserve the little bit that we ask you, if you can look into that this way from our perspective and see to it that we can receive what we've put in front of you. Thank you.
Well, can I ask anything?
Oh, yes, of course, Talat. Please, okay. Talat.
So I just wanted to address this question in terms of research that is done. We are a Research One university. The number of career awards that we get, the number of faculty recognition that we get, we are in no way less than UF, UCF, USF or FSU. The faculty, junior faculty we have hired, the aspirations that we have, I have never been given the impression either from UCF administrators or from faculty that we are any less than faculty in these other three universities. I don't believe in research we have ever compared ourselves to FAU, FIU, or any other. We have always been compared to the other three, USF, UF, and FSU. And the other thing is that legislature, of course, there are many reasons why they go the way they go, depending on where they have gotten their degrees, the fact that UF and FSU have been around much longer and so on. There are many reasons for that. But we have our own, we can do the reasoning ourselves, right? We can have our own metrics about how we perform in research, how we perform in teaching. We can do that. And if we don't evaluate ourselves internally and make the comparison with these universities and prove to the legislature that we are in the same class, if we don't do that, I don't see who's going to do it for us. If we accept that we are not in that league, they are not going to accept us. So we have to make the point ourselves. And the message that we have to give to our faculty is that yes, that is the league that we're in. And I think, we should not be waiting for the legislature to hand it to us. We have to show that that's where we are. And I think we are. Well, I would not disagree personally about that, but the plain fact is that there are objective metrics that the state has set up. We do not meet them. And there are economic consequences to the fact that we don't, because these universities that do meet them, the only two right now, receive many millions of dollars every year as a consequence of meeting that. this is, I'm not denigrating anything that our faculty do in any way, or the research that we do. I mean, I think I would agree with you that we're preeminent, but we don't meet the objective criteria for that under the BOG. So until we do, we're not going to get that extra money.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean that we don't aspire to that, but and don't believe and don't want our faculty to believe that they are, because I think they are, absolutely. But it does make a difference in terms of the funding that we get.
Sure. We have to work with the realities that are in front of us, right? So we do have to look within that and then see, is there the possibility of giving faculty the kinds of raises that we are talking about, right? Because obviously we cannot go beyond what has been, what is our income and what has been given to us. But within that, we have to see whether this can be accommodated. But I will not buy the argument that by any measure we are in the category of FAU and FIU and not the other. That's all I'm trying to say.
I understand that a lot, and I would agree with you in terms of those things. I was saying it in terms of the amount of money that we get. Yep. I mean, UF and FSU got $13 million added to their budgets this year because of their preeminent stature. That makes a big difference. And that's, you know, that's all I'm saying. So in terms of comparators. Well,
that's a reality, but we should.
On every other level, yes, that is the category that we belong in. Absolutely. I have no disagreement with you on that. And I did not mean to in any way insult the faculty by what I said, because I don't feel that way. It's just a sad fact of the way things operate in Florida right now. Those who have get, and those who don't.
We have to keep making the case.
We do have to keep making the case, and we have to keep working hard to get our, to meet those metrics. Exactly. And we are. I mean, we've met a lot of them, but we still have a couple, three or four that we are just struggling to meet. Yeah.
Can I just add a couple of things, Sherry?
Absolutely.
The other reason why we did not use FAU and FIU is because it's slightly biased. Because it is mostly teaching, they have a lot of instructors and lecturers, which have a significantly lower salaries than earning tenure track. So that was another reason for not using that number, the FIU, FAU numbers. And could you tell us, do you know offhand, what are those metrics that we are struggling to reach?
I don't know which ones we haven't met yet. I can ask. I know Paige Borden does, and I can ask her to send them to me, and I'll forward them to you.
Okay. Yeah, because I know FSU was able to provide like 3% salary increase, in part because of the performance funding.
Yeah, it makes a difference. Unfortunately, I wish it didn't, but.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they were able to give that much, because it's not recurring money necessarily. That's the part that I would be
the
surprised.
The preeminent? Well, it isn't.
I'm pretty confident, I think. I have this feeling.
Yeah.
At least in the union world, they speak there like there are no problems. they will be fine as far as like salary increases. Though they'd like more, I'm sure.
Well, yes.
Okay. Oh, okay. Thank you, Eloy. I see the text. I see the chat. Does anyone else from my team want to say anything else before we conclude?
I have a quick comment. I know I'm not on your team.
Okay. But, go ahead.
So as to the CARES Act funding, I just wanted to point out that by law, half of that money has to go to students in the form of direct payments.
Yes.
So it's not really, we don't have half of that available for any purpose other than that. So when we say that it's only asking for 10% of the CARES Act funding, that's a little, it's not capturing the full picture of what our options are with that money.
Yeah.
And of course, that is not recurring dollars either. That is a kind of, like you said, a one-time injection of money to help stimulate the economy as a response to the coronavirus pandemic. So mm-hmm. I don't know about the feasibility of using that for a salary increase, but there are many more people on this call more experienced to talk about those issues than me. I just wanted to chime in on the CARES Act restriction.
Okay. Well,
is there any percentage of the CARES Act that is that the administration is planning on using on faculty?
I have to, Maria, I would have to get with, and Sherry may know, I don't think she or I know at the top of our head what the plans for the CARES Act money are. We knew there were some initial needs, but as far as kind of dealing with the money that was lost in the spring from shutting down mid-semester, but I don't know what final decisions have been made or if any final decisions have been made about how that half of the money will be used. So I don't know right off the bat to tell you, but I know that there were some, a lot of claims on the money and a lot of people from every direction thinking that that money might be used for them, but it you know, can't go everywhere. So I'm not exactly positive, but we can try and find out what the plan is for that money.
Okay. I mean, I don't know if this like helps at all, like to tell the administration, but a lot of our students right now are unemployed. They don't have any work. And some of them are the breadwinners in their home. So, you know, sometimes we hear about the, in other schools, you know, the students live with their parents, but here the parents live with the students. And so I've been asked a few times from a few students, grad students and undergraduates, if I had any work for them, including like mowing the lawn or whatever. So, I mean, the thing is, it's, I know our professors at UCF really, like what Marie said, repeating what she said, they do care for our students. We do care a lot for them. So I know that some of our professors, if they didn't need the money, they would probably pay it out to students. So I'm just saying, like, you know, we all help each other. This is a terrible crisis that we're undergoing. So the CARES Act, it's not like we're going to give this, think of administratively of the CARES Act being used in order to stimulate the economy. So it won't be used just to pocket or hoard it, but it will be actually used to move back. Oh, Sherry.
Oh. We have to hold on. We have to wait for Sherry's bells.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
So I just looked up the measures for preeminence. And it says that the university's endowment needs to be $5 million.
Mm.
University of South Florida's is $513.5 million. Florida State is $681.4 million. University of Florida's is 2 something billion. And ours is 164.7. So you can see we're millions and millions, hundreds of millions in dollars away from those people as far as hitting that goal. And that's just one of them. I think we've made a lot of freshman retention, I think we're over the 92%. I know we did really well on freshman retention. I don't know what COVID did to that. The number of National Academy members among UCF faculty, those are very, very expensive. I know we have a few. And then spending in science and engineering research, we may have made the $218 million threshold. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And postdoc appointees, we're supposed to have 200 of them. At the time that this article was written, we had 68. I could check in a minute how many postdocs we have, but I think that endowment is the thing that's really going to, if that's one of the measures, which I think personally is unfair, but nevertheless, that's a measure that they're using that you and I and everybody would have to just, like, I don't know, have cupcake sales every day all across the nation in order to get that. I don't know how we would do $400 million for that.
I mean, it is frustrating because we're a university that caters to working class students, and they're not necessarily the wealthiest, or it takes generations until they can get wealthy. So
I totally agree with you. When I saw that metric, my heart sank, because a lot of other things we can do. The faculty are working hard, and they have mm-hmm. done a lot to do to increase retention and to you know, get in grants for science and do all those things. But that is a very frustrating metric for us to have to meet.
Yeah.
But those metrics can also be changed, right? I mean, we have to work at it. These have been coming back and forth. They can
get other metrics. I agree with the metric itself. I personally think that's a cruel way to separate people out. I don't disagree with you at all.
Yeah.
I just, if that's not up to me, yeah, that's the legislatures and people
actually the preeminent metrics have not changed. The metrics that change are the performance funding metrics. Those are the ones that they switch around every year. And, you know, we do pretty well on those metrics when they don't switch them in the middle of the game for us. But one of the things that really hurt us on some of these metrics is that they switched from a 6-year graduation rate to a 4-year graduation rate, which really hurts metropolitan universities. It, you know, it favors land-grant colleges where the vast majority of your students are 18-year-olds who come, live on campus, and graduate in 4 years. They're not working-class kids. So, I mean, the deck is stacked against us, but that doesn't mean we don't keep pushing our wagon up the hill.
Can I say something?
Oh, yes, yes, please.
Sure. I just wanted to say that one of the things that we're seeing is that in a lot of other universities, students don't want to come back because they're complaining about online classes and things like that. In our case, that is not the case because and actually we have the same or higher enrollments, as Giovanna was saying. Because we did such a great job in transitioning to online, and the online classes that we give are of high quality. I can say at least in my department, they're very good quality. We are very involved. We really spend a lot of time. And I've seen the phrase a lot in the UCF website that the transition was seamless and that we did such a great job and so on, right? And it was. But that doesn't say what happened behind the scenes, right? So I can tell you from my perspective and a lot of other faculty that I know that those weeks after spring break and even to now were a lot of hours. They were, I spent many, many days where I slept 5 or less hours because we were just, I don't know if I can explain exactly how much work it was. You know, I was teaching 3 face-to-face and 1 online. It took a lot of time to transfer all these face-to-face into online and to make it so that we could reach out to the students, make sure that they were okay, that nobody fell through the cracks. I know that there were several adjuncts in my department that had never taught online. So we were helping them as well, right? So we were sort of like trying to keep the boat afloat while keeping ourselves afloat as well. And I just can't, I just want you to understand how much work it was. I mean, it was a lot of work, a lot of hours, a lot of effort, a lot of training things that we had to go in. I mean, some of us didn't even know what Zoom was before this, right? And we just, you know, we had to just train ourselves, you know, find new ways of assessment, train each other. Reach out to the students. Students, as we know, they themselves were having, so we had to make alternative assessments, change the assignments. Even the online class that I was teaching had to be changed because students were in between. They couldn't access their materials, you know, things like that. So I just want you to know that, I mean, how much work it was, how much effort. I mean, you know, we made it through, and we made it in at the end offering very good quality classes and experiences for the students. Our students, you know, made it. We made it, but it wasn't easy, and it took a lot of work, a lot of effort, time, hours that we didn't have. You know, that we didn't give to my. I mean, my I have. You know, a child with a disability, you know, that wasn't going to school or anything. So, you know, it was a lot of sacrifice on our part, right? And so this is not something that was easy to any of us. So I think it would just be a little recognition, you know, for all the work that we spent and the effort and the, frankly, tears at sometimes, right? Because we were like, you know, we were functioning on 3 or 4 hours of sleep at night. So, you know, and the result was that UCF has also been in the news for good things. you know, for the good value for money, for the way that our programs were able to transition and so on, right? So, you know, a little recognition would be nice as well. And, you know, as Giovanna said, not just, you know, like words, but also like show us, you know, that that our work is valued and that all the hours that we put in are recognized as well, right? I mean, I can't even, you know, express how many hours went into transitioning these classes. You know, it seems like it's easy. Oh, just put it online. But it's not that easy. You know, I mean, it was, you know, especially because it was also compressed. Because, you know, at first we thought, oh, it was just going to be a week. And then, oh, it's just going to be 2 weeks. And then it just, like, everything exploded, right? So I just wanted to say, you know, from the perspective of a faculty that were on the front lines, how we had to go through that as well.
Thank you. I do appreciate that. And I know that it was very difficult.
Since we're still recording, I wanted to add a little bit more to what Annabelle was saying, because I do know I have friends in a lot of other universities, mostly elite universities like Stanford or Harvard or the Amherst College. I know a small liberal arts college in Northeast. I mean, they actually, when they had to transition, this basically became vacation. So, I mean, I know like at Stanford, they canceled classes, they canceled final exams, they canceled like meetings with students. They just basically said, you know, okay, everybody hands off deck, you know, we can't do anything about it. But we did the exact opposite here. And I will say, you know, my husband works at Stanford. And he was like, why are you so busy? Like, it's COVID time. You know, for him, it was like almost like a break because he didn't have to worry about final exams. Basically, a student needed to say, I'm stressed. And that released the students from all exams, all everything else that was supposed to be done in the semester. So he lost an entire, well, they're in the quarter system. So they lost, they basically just wrote off the entire quarter of, I think it's called winter quarter there. But that, the exact opposite happened here. And I think that's what we're looking for, recognition that we didn't just like wipe our hands and go, okay, well, it's too bad. Students just won't get a proper education this semester. They did the absolute opposite. I saw it in my department. I saw Annabelle. I saw other professors in other departments work like crazy to make sure that their students had the proper education and to continue the semester and so that they could have proper grades. I mean, there was a lot of stress going on and with all of that. But I do want that to be recognized that at UCF, the professors did not give up. They just kept going. They kept moving and very, very active. I think at that time period around March or April, Scott Monnier had put out a survey. We got like, you know, I've only been up to like 70 of the remarks. Like people went and answered immediately what the challenges were. So we got like, I mean, we can share that, some of that information with you, but everything from, yeah, not sleeping, as Annabella said, to really taking this job so seriously. And I think, you know, I've been in a lot of other places, and I don't think I've ever seen professors work as hard as they do here. Just in making sure their research is done, their students are taken care of, and students at different levels, too. I mean, the graduates, the undergraduates, our undergraduate honors, our undergraduates who are not so prepared for college, but at all levels. I mean, we're constantly transitioning here. And so the request for the COVID stipend, if it can come out of the CARES Act, we'd really like to see that because it is recognizing the tremendous effort that we do here. Yeah.
Well, thank you for that perspective. And I will certainly share that with the provost and the president. I know the provost gets it. I think the president, you know, he's relatively new to UCF, but you don't have to be here long to see how everybody at this university works like dogs because we're just understaffed at every level and underfunded. So, and have been for a very long time. So yeah, I appreciate it.
All right.
So I think we've probably accomplished about what we can get done today, unless you guys have more you want to share with us. I don't think we have much that we can share with you right now until I get more feedback from those who have more authority than I do.
Okay. Sherry, I did want to say one thing, that I think that as a faculty member, we were also very appreciative of all the gadgets and the bells and the whistles and everything about online teaching that was already available. I can just give you my experience that on the Thursday, when this is March 10th or something like that, when we kind of knew that this was going to happen, I had been using Zoom before that for my collaborations around the world. So I was very familiar with that. And so I walked over to the Faculty Center for Learning and basically to talk to them about it. And at that time they said, that's a good idea. And we're looking and there are other people. There were various meetings going on. And the next dates, and then I wrote to Mike Johnson about how I was doing it and we could use that account. And he wrote back saying, no, we're trying to get an institutional account. But what I want to say is within 24 hours, everyone got up to speed. We got the license. We knew we could put Zoom into web courses, which we had already been using. So I really appreciated all the help, and that did help us, although it does take still a lot of effort to make it into a really good, make the class worth it for students. But yeah.
Well, so, I have to say, if there are any of my heroes in this whole thing, other than the fact who made it possible, it's Tom Cavanaugh's group and the IT folks, the incredible amount of work that they did. And I don't know how they pulled it off. I really don't. But it took a lot of effort on the part of a lot of people to get us through the semester. So, well, thank you all very much.
Well, thank you. Thank you all. And is Dr. Johnson at the hospital?
He's out of the hospital. He was participating in the Faculty Senate meeting yesterday.
He did see that, yeah.
Yeah, and he's back at work. He'll be back at work on Monday, and I suspect he's feeling a bit overwhelmed after being out for a week. His inbox doesn't slow down, but he's responding, so... we're going to get my clock again. Sorry.
I did have one small question, Yovana, and I don't have the language up in front of me anymore, but the $1,500 per person, if they weren't making more than $1,500, if they got a 3% increase, did you take into account the people that have low FTEs?
I didn't, yeah. So, okay. I mean, it'd be prorated, so we can have prorate language.
Okay. I'm not sure what that would look like when you have it's 3% or $1,500 and then you try to prorate that. I'm not sure what that would look like. Just saying that there's a handful. I mean, I'm not saying that there's tons and tons, but there's a handful of people that are less than 1.0 FTE. It looks like we're looking at, just so you know, that increase with the 1500 is about $6 million. And that's kind of I'm just doing like a back of the envelope calculation. I'm going really, really fast. I'll go slower, but I just thought I'd let you know that it's about $6 million to the university for that.
Okay. And that would be the reoccurring.
And that would be a reoccurring cost. Okay. Yeah. $1,000 per person, every $1,000 is like $1.66 million. Yeah.
That's good to know.
That's a flat fee. So when you're talking to us, just keep in mind what, you know, the university is having to account for. And so, because there's 1,660 in-unit people now.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you multiply that times 1,000, those are the consequences, right? So just knowing that what $3,000 means to the university is, you know, $5 million. Okay.
Okay.
A rough calculation. As I recall, 1% of the university is 1.4 million. So that's why, I mean, it's rough. I have to go and dig and take out the FTEs and you know, it's like a big, there's a lot of issues, a lot of complications in there, but I thought you'd like to know.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Yeah. I'll put that into the calculation then.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Can we stay a minute? And can you put me or somebody in? Oh, we've got Brianna's in charge. So we'll see.
Yeah, I got to talk to Charlie. So, yes.
All right. So you don't need me.
Goodbye, everybody else. Thank you, team. I'll see you guys.